But let me jump on into the opening monologue, the Right Side Way monologue, brought to you every day by attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. I'll tell you more about Stan McDonald later, but right now, just know this, the Right Side Way daily monologue, brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald. All right, let's talk about Panama. There's been a lot of talk lately about the Panama Canal. I mean, it's been on nobody's radar until Trump raised eyebrows by announcing in a classic meme tweet that the U.S. ought to consider taking back the Panama Canal. And you might wonder what all the fuss is. I mean, why do we care? Why would Trump even say something like that about a mere canal? Well, if you're asking that question, then you don't know your history. If you don't know the history of the Panama Canal, then you don't know how important it is to our actual daily lives even now. And that it took a strength of will and it came at a great cost. And America, by the way, changed the entire world when we dug that canal. But let me back up a bit. I'll start by giving you a frame of reference here. One of my favorite passages in the Bible is often referred to as a story of Jonathan and his armor bearer. Oh man, it's such a great story. It's a battlefield story. It's a story of heroism. It's a story of getting something big done against even bigger odds. It's also, by the way, a story that clearly illustrates that sometimes the issue is less about the end goal and more about just starting. Just starting. So here's the deal. In this particular story, Saul was still the king, the Philistines were oppressing Israel, and there were no weapons at all on the Israelite side because they'd been banned. No weapons, none. But the Philistines were threatening war, and they had marched out to battle, so Saul rallied up what he could, but we're told that many of his soldiers were so scared that they were in hiding. And it was bad, y'all. The Philistines were intent on ravaging the Israelites, but Saul had a son named Jonathan. King Saul's son Jonathan just could not abide by what he was seeing. The Philistine army was huge. They were well-stocked with weapons and chariots and all the supplies they could need, and they were camped on one side of a valley, while what Saul could muster of an army for Israel was camped on the other side of the valley. Well, Israel was intimidated. They were in hiding, but Jonathan, he got a notion. Jonathan looked at his aide, his armor-bearer. He said, "Let's go over to those uncircumcised and see if the Lord will work for us, for God is not restrained to save by many or by few." You look it up. That's what he said. God is not restrained to save by many or by few. Literally what he was saying was, let's go over there and pick a fight and see if God's in it. I mean, what kind of plan is that? If I was the armor bearer, I might have taken issue with that kind of military planning. I mean, really, what it boiled down to was, I have an idea. Let's see if it works. But his armor bearer was as much a hero as Jonathan was, and he responded, "You do all that is in your heart, and I will be there with you." So basically, these two guys up against an army, not even sure yet if they fully understood what God was going to do in it, they just started. And that's the rub. They just started. And the story goes that teeth and hair were flying pretty soon after that as Jonathan and his armor bearer wiped out an entire garrison of Philistines. Just put a whooping on them. Two men. And it caught the attention of Saul, who could see and hear the fight across the way. And it galvanized the whole nation of Israel. And they came up out of hiding with a renewed sense of purpose. And they joined the fight. And they won. The victory was huge, but the outcome was originally very uncertain. The desire was great, the talent was strong, the need was there, but what would the outcome even be? Because on its face, what they were saying they had to do made no sense. It made no sense at all. The difference between Jonathan and his armor bearer and apparently everybody else in the entire nation of Israel was that he was the one who was bold enough to just start. Well, y'all, history is filled with greatness that follows from someone who wasn't great, but was willing to step out into the unknown and just start. It's the difference between being willing to step out assertively and take a risk as opposed to being stuck in a siege mentality. If you're in a siege mentality, you find yourself, you know, cowering down, barricading the gates, fretting over your resources to see how long they'll last. In a siege mentality, you find yourself preserving and protecting, but not really moving. In a siege mentality, you're maintaining the status quo. In a siege mentality, you're just trying to hold on to what you got and hope that some help finally eventually gets there. It's hard to start anything when you're hunkered down in a siege mentality. And when you start, you have to actually go. I mean, you can't just sit still and say you started. Jonathan could have taken two steps and stopped. It would have made sense. I mean, the garrison of the Philistines was huge. But he had to start, and he had to actually go all the way across the valley, up a cliff, into the midst of the enemy, before he could really even know what the outcome would be. You look at history, you find the great moments. You will find someone or some group, or usually some smaller number or scale than their opposition, who finally stepped out of a siege mentality and did something that galvanized true change. They just started. I mean, I could name any number of moments in history that measure up the same way. Reagan said, "Tear down this wall," and soon after that, the fall of the Soviet Union occurred. Bill Gates, he decided to start a little company called Microsoft in his garage, and it became the world leader and has a $1 trillion impact. A little-known record company in Memphis, Tennessee called Sun Records changed the world of music because it took a chance one day on a young guy named Elvis Presley. Later on, went on to sign Charlie Rich, Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash. Look, in every one of those moments, somebody had to do something that nobody else was doing. They had to get out of their siege mentality. They had to start, and they had to actually go. Actually, across a valley to where the opposition was camped, sometimes not even knowing if it was going to work. They just had to start, and they had to go. It's like a saying I've heard about an old man who used to say in an old man wisdom sort of way, "Ah, Lord, a lot see, but few know. A lot start, but few go." Well, that, my friends, is what happened with the Panama Canal. Teddy Roosevelt had a notion. Congress and the press and the public, they all thought it was crazy. It had already been tried once and failed. It was a total failure. The French lost an estimated 22,000 men who died trying to dig the Panama Canal. Why try again? Why dig a canal 51 miles across the entire Isthmus of Panama? That's crazy. A water bridge to connect the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans big enough for ships to pass through? But Teddy Roosevelt said that he knew that if he gave the project over to the debates or the naysayers, that they would debate it for the next 50 years. So he decided he would rather dig the canal and let the naysayers debate him for the next 50 years. Yeah, so he dug the Panama Canal. It started with one shovel of dirt. It started. And it went on and on. And over 5,600 men died during the American construction of the canal. The U.S. government spent $375 million to build it. It made it the most expensive project in U.S. history up to that time. That would be the equivalent, by the way, of $15.2 billion in today's dollars. But they started, and they got it done. And today, there are entire realms of commerce that use and rely on the Panama Canal. The shipbuilding industry worldwide uses the size and the depth of the Panama Canal to determine the size of ships that are built all over the world. To this day, the world shipbuilding industry builds their ships in a standard that is known as Panamax. A Panamax ship can fit through the locks of the canal. And since 40% of all global maritime trade passes through the Panama Canal, it means that nearly every ship has to be built to Panamax standards. Yeah, that's 40% of world commerce shipborne passing through the canal, of which two-thirds of that goes to the United States or from the United States. Over $270 billion of cargo annually transits through the canal that was started by a crazy idea from an American president. And it has become the standard. It changed the world of commerce, it opened up trade, it removed barriers, and it all happened because Roosevelt was willing to just start. Look, somewhere along the way, somewhere in the midst of the siege, someone has to step out and see what happens, right? You might go across the way, you might get skinned up a mite. You might get in a ruckus, bring some scunion, who knows? But in the middle of starting and going, you might get neck deep and find out that God's actually in it. And the people who are around you might get roused up, and it could make all the difference. We don't have the luxury of being in a siege mentality. We don't. I mean, the liberal left right now wants our demise and the demise of our culture. It's going to take getting outside of the siege mentality. It's going to take starting. It's going to take going. It's going to take doing. I'm telling you, that's exactly why we have the Panama Canal. And as we talk about it here in a minute, do not lose sight of the fact that it all started with one idea and a president who was willing to just start, and it changed the entire world of commerce for the last over 100 years. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.